You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello, welcome to another episode. This episode, I'm joined by a good friend of mine I've had on previous shows. Great to have him back again, David Heffernan. Now, David is the UK's number one provider of anxiety solutions. He works with corporates and with individuals to create awareness and to end stigma and to educate. He's been described as a pioneer for mental health and wellness, and David's launched programs to support mental health in the workplace to create positive, forward-thinking environments that employees enjoy working in. His background story is very much one of a kind. He was born in Salford, dealt with extraordinary life issues, death, grief, abuse, homelessness, violence, but this did not hold him back. In fact, it created the momentum and passion that Dave has today. Dave's an expert in mental health from the raw, real life issues that he has faced and that he's helped others to face. These are what makes him the expert. He's the guy next door, but with a fresh perspective. He understands the importance of mental health, both from a business and a personal point of view. He's not afraid to work through issues, to make connections, to break down barriers and to find solutions. And unlike other coaching solutions, he is there when you need him because he knows mental health is not a 9-to-5 issue. He is committed and he is David Heffernan. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm fine, thank you, Keith. That was a great introduction. I wonder who wrote that.
I'll put you in touch with them. It's great to have you. Great to have you here again. How's everything going in Dave's life?
Everything's good. Yeah, everything's good in the world at the moment. It's a bit of a strange one because for me to be successful, I need to find people who are struggling. So it's a bit of a weird situation to be in business. But there is a lot of people who need help and are reaching out, which is a great thing. So it's all good.
Yeah, and long may continue because the more they reach out and connect with you, the more you help them to overcome their fears, their thoughts, their whole mental health side of things.
Exactly. And the good thing is now we've just come back from Mental Health Awareness Week. And, you know, our social media timelines were covered from, you know, feed to feed with mental health awareness posts, which is great. I'm not seeing that many now after it. But the good thing is it's opened up the door to conversation now and companies are willing to have a, you know, an open discussion about where they're at with their own mental health and wellbeing policies. So, you know, it's opened the doors. It's opened the doors for conversation.
Which is the important thing, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. It all starts with a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. So how big an issue is mental health in for businesses?
It's huge. Basic statistics is 1 in 6 in one point will have issues with the mental health. They'll suffer with anxiety or depression. You're looking, I was looking at a statistic this afternoon, where 20 out of every 100, so 1 in 5 employees or people will have had suicidal thoughts. You know, and businesses seem to think that it doesn't affect them. When you start talking suicide or, you know, severe depression, there seems to be a disconnect. And, you know, they just need to understand that these 1 in 5 and 1 in 6, that's their workforce.
Yeah.
You know, you can't escape it. It's unescapable, you know, and if they bury their head in the sand, unfortunately, you know, the business will suffer as well as the employee as well. So it makes absolute sense to nip it in the bud, to have a robust and healthy wellbeing policy in the workplace. You know, so many companies, you know, do pizza nights and bring in massages and what have you. That's great in the very short term, but it lasts for the getting through the shift. It needs to be so much more than that. It needs to be an open culture where employees feel safe to be able to open up. That's when changes will be made.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the short-term feel-good things are good and they are useful, but they don't solve, as you say, they don't solve the long-term.
No.
I got a question for you. As regular listeners will know, the whole theme around the shows is all around fears and so on. So talking about mental health may seem a slight disconnect there. What is the connection between fear and the work that you do? Because I know there is a big connection.
In its most simplest form, anxiety is driven by fear. You know, what if this goes wrong? What if this happens? And it just creates this alternative storyboard in the mind, which is completely false. So I've just got the cat jump on. It is very much driven by fear. Depression, again, the negative thoughts, the negative self-talk is all fear-based. You know, so it's a huge connection between fear and mental health and mental illness. In the workplace alone, you know, people talk about workplace bullying. You know, so there'll be fear of losing the job. You know, presenteeism, for example, has just overtaken absenteeism. And presenteeism is where you're still going to work, but you're not fully there. You know, your mind's not with the job. Mm-hmm. You may be physically ill, like a cold or flu, or you may be suffering with, you know, low-level depression or anxieties, and so your mind is not fully on the job, so therefore you're not being productive. So you may as well be off. Because of this fear of being disciplined or being sacked, they come in. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't help the workplace. That doesn't help the employer. It certainly doesn't help the employee.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's driven by fear, people coming into work when they're not suitable for work, you know, so.
Yeah, gotcha. So, yeah, as you point out, there is a massive connection between fear and mental health. Now, often heard people say that, when you start to have bad thoughts or negative thoughts and so on, the best thing to do is kind of just ignore them, brush them to one side, and think positive thoughts. Kind of tell the negative thoughts to shut up and go away, and just think positive thoughts, and that will get you through everything and make everything all right. Is it as simple as that?
No, it's not. You know, it's all well and good clearing your mind, but the problems will still be there. You know, the negative self-talk will still turn up. And the important thing is, and one thing I practice on a daily basis, which really does help me, is I sit for an hour every day with my thoughts and I just allow them to be, you know. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I get negative self-talk, you know, I'm a bit overweight, you know, so I still hear the little voice in my head saying, oh, you're fat, you're this. And the important thing is to be okay with those thoughts. I know that sounds a bit crazy, but what these thoughts are just ego-driven. It's just the ego in its perverse way trying to protect you. And it goes back to caveman days, you know, the little voice in the head, fight or flight, don't go out there, there's a saber-toothed tiger trying to eat you. You know, so don't go out, we'll protect you. But we've evolved since then, you know, yet this little voice is still in its little perverse way, is trying to protect you. Don't go and do that speaking gig. What if you die on stage? Oh, you're better off just staying here. Don't go for that job or that promotion. You know, they might not like you. And then, you know, you put your head above the parapet then. And so it's important, by being at one with your thoughts, by allowing it just to float up inside in front of you like a little bubble, and genuinely just let it float there, just let it be there, and then just genuinely saying, yeah, I'm okay with that. Because one thing ego doesn't like is permission. It loves resistance. So the more you resist your thoughts, the more you run away from your thoughts, the louder they'll become. And this is where people get into severe depression and severe psychosis and various other forms of mental illness, is because they're running away from the thoughts. Thoughts can't hurt you. Only your reaction to those thoughts can hurt you. And if your reaction is a positive one by saying, I'm okay with that, all of a sudden these thoughts disappear. And the amazing thing is, after about 20, 25 minutes of doing this, all the negative self-talk, all the positive self-talk comes away, and you find yourself connecting to your inner core. And this is what you need to be listening to, that gut feeling. And when you get to that place, that's when the magic happens. But so many people are scared of that because they don't want to be with the thoughts 25 minutes because the thoughts are terrifying to them. But they just need to have that element of trust and faith. You know, that this is pretty much science-based as well. You know what I mean? You can actually go back to dealing with it in science. You know, we have a part of the brain, the reticular accessory system, where it filters out all the stuff that's unimportant to you and keeps the stuff that's important. So if you're having these negative self-talk all the time and you're constantly thinking about them and just not letting go, being okay with them, more things will show up in your world that will mean you'll be more depressed. So by being okay with the thoughts, by letting them go, giving them permission to be there, they'll go on their own accord, and then you'll just filter right down into your core, which is where the magic happens. But most people won't try that. Most people won't try that. But if they did, they'll realize, you know, that the thoughts are just that, thoughts. They can't do any more.
That is really interesting. So it's not a case of seeking to banish or crowd out or shout out the negative thoughts and so on. It's taking the time to allow those thoughts to fully express themselves, to acknowledge that those thoughts exist, to let them think themselves out, as it were. Yeah. And that then kind of lets it dissipate.
Exactly. And the ironic thing is if you do that every day consistently, the end result, the benefit will be a clear mind anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a win-win. It's a win-win.
Yeah. I guess thinking about it, it's kind of like if, as you say, and as we both know, your unconscious mind, where all these thoughts come from, its primary job is to keep you safe, keep you alive. So when it has these thoughts, it's doing its job. It's warning you. And I guess, I mean, it would be like if I came up to you and said, hey, Dave, here's a massive threat to you. And you just said, shut up, go away. But I cared about you deeply and I wanted to make sure that you were still safe, I would keep coming up to you. The more you had to shut me out, the more I said, no, but you have to listen. Whereas if you let me express that thought, let me express the danger to you, got the warning to you, and I was satisfied you had all the information, I would then go off and get on with whatever else I was getting on with.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. So that's a really good way of looking at how to sit through these things. Is that like meditation, or is it a different
It's a form of meditation. You know, you can meditate when you're washing the pots. You know, you can meditate when you're ironing. You know, if you're going off into a different world, you're meditating.
Yeah.
You know, because I certainly, when I'm washing the pots, I'm a bit strange in the fact that I will look at each pot and I will see the crack in the plate maybe, or I'll, you know, notice how the bubbles sort of move from side to side. And it's a form of meditation, but it's also a form of mindfulness. You know, and just being mindful of where you are in this present moment, you know, forgetting what's happening in the next hour or 2 hours, because again, that's where the fear-based anxiety happens, is what's happening in the future.
Yes.
The future doesn't happen. You know, it's always now. It's always this present time.
Yeah.
So if you focus on what's happening now, focus on your thoughts, focusing on the little things around you, you know, noticing, you know, things that you probably wouldn't even notice. You know what I mean? Because if you was washing the pots and you looked at those bubbles, just the structure of the bubbles, just how the sun sort of glistens off it, puts you in a completely different mood.
Yeah.
You know, and if you say to most people, just watch those bubbles, they'll think, weirdo. Yeah. You know, but most people won't do what they need to do to get to a place where they know they should be. You know, there's no harm in trying this stuff.
Absolutely.
So, you know, but if you do it consistently, it works.
Yeah, so it's allowing all those thoughts and the fears and the warnings to express themselves, allowing them to be heard, acknowledging them, and then allowing your mind to clear, and then you just kind of get to the real interesting bit, and as you put it, it's where the magic then starts to happen, because you've cleared out all the surface stuff and you can now focus on what's going on deeper. And you do that for an hour each day, you say?
An hour in the morning and an hour at night.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I may not get to do it, but I'm attuned now where I can just switch off.
Yeah.
You know, to my wife's annoyance, because I'll be looking like I'm present in person, but I'm not even listening to a single word they're saying. Which I shouldn't really admit on video like this if she's going to see it. But no, I am very good at being able to switch off now and just focus on one thinking, because the thoughts are there. You get millions of thoughts every single day. The thoughts are constantly there.
Yeah.
So by having a set time, right in the morning when you're just waking up, you know, that first thought sets you up for the whole day then. You know, so by doing it pretty much as soon as I get up, then it puts my day into a much better place than if I just let the thoughts run rampant and I try and get rid of them whilst I'm getting the kids to school or doing whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Right, interesting, interesting. So how long have you been doing this for?
Quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. Probably consistently in formulaically about 2 years, 2.5 years. But you know my power story. I used to do this whilst I was homeless. I did this. Probably I started when I was living in the Lake District, in the tent. I just had so much time to myself. I had no way of escaping my thoughts, you know. And so that really changed my whole outlook and mindset.
Yeah. Wow.
So 20 years really I've been doing it, but 2.5 years as a business.
Yeah. Got it. And so even now you still see the benefits and the results of doing this?
Massively. You know, I've had so much stuff going on. Recently, I was diagnosed with Meniere's disease. Mm-hmm. I've also just been diagnosed recently with spinal canal stenosis, which means ultimately I will be paralyzed. And so when I went to the surgeon a few weeks back, we touched upon surgery, but because I've got the Meniere's disease and I've got 30% vital lung capacity, my surgeon's words were, if you was to go down the surgical route, you may as well go and book yourself a holiday to Dignitas, because at least you'll have a nice break to Switzerland beforehand. You know, and so, again, this could really ultimately push up the anxieties and the fears, because I've got two beautiful boys, I've got my wife, you know, I've got a business, I've got a nice life. Yeah. But I've controlled what I can control, and I'm not sweating the rest. And it's because of these strategies that I've got in place that I don't get panicked. I can think clearly. I can put things in place. I can move my business forward. So if, and it's a big, you know, paralysis happened, I've still got a business to run. I've still got my wife who loves me. I've still got my boys who love me. And they're not benefiting in a negative way. You know, so, but had I not had these strategies in place, had I not done this mindfulness and this meditation, I'd be all over the show now, and rightly so, you know, because most people would break.
Well, yeah.
So huge benefit.
Yeah, even just one of those, let alone that the whole culmination will be enough to send most people over the edge. So, and the fact that you're able to, I mean, I've seen you talk about it in a very, very calm and composed and matter-of-fact manner. Various times, the fact you're able to do that and deal with it in such a calm manner is you put down to the fact that you do this mindfulness every day, just to acknowledge all those thoughts, acknowledge the fears, and then allow. Beautiful.
I think it's important as well to walk the walk as well as talk the talk.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know. I'm not going to go into negatives, but there will be people who just come textbook and started a business out.
Yeah.
You know, I've had 25 years of doing this, and it's worked for me.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I'm moving forward with it and helping others as best I can. But I wouldn't be honest and open and authentic. I hate that word, but I wouldn't be authentic if I wasn't living by my rules.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's quite clear, anybody who gets to see me or know me, they know that I genuinely do live this way and have this thought process. And, you know, I've got the medical records there to show that this is, you know, this is happening. Yet I'm still calm. You know, it's a much nicer way to live, to be calm, and such a better way to be role models to my children.
For sure, for sure,
giving up and letting the fears take over.
Yeah. Wow. Now, excuse me, we touched on, you touched on this a little while earlier. And something I want to explore a little bit more. You're talking about anxiety is basically fear, is very much fear-based. I read a very good description of anxiety, which is basically anxiety is when you're scared of things that haven't happened yet. So it's kind of fear of what might happen. Letting go of that, though, I mean, so often we're scared of what might happen because we don't know what's going to happen. And just not knowing what's going to happen, that can be a very, very scary thing in and of itself and also increase anxiety a lot. How can we learn to handle the fact that all these things are unknown?
It's, you know what, it's not easy, but it's simple. Just fall in love with not knowing. Just fall in love with not knowing. You know, I do. You know, I'm open to opportunity consistently, and constantly I'm open to opportunity. If it works out, great, fantastic. If it doesn't work out, I've learned. You know, unless you've got a death wish, most situations you find yourself in are not going to kill you.
Yeah.
It's just going to be an exercise that you've learned from.
Got it.
And so just falling in love with the not knowing.
Yeah.
And again, by using the strategies as before, by listening to your thoughts, being present with them, being okay with them, once you get down to that inner core, that will tell you whether it's the right thing to do and wrong thing to do. And I spoke previously, anyway, in the past about making peace with your decisions, both good and bad. You know, that's another way of avoiding regret, because a lot of fear, if you do something that you're not fully committed to when it goes wrong, then rather than making peace with it, you start regretting it. And then that brings on the cycle of depression and anxiety even more so. So these are two things. It's falling in love with the unknown, make peace with your decisions, good and bad.
Yeah.
Control what you can control and screw the rest. You know, those three there, if you live by those consistently, your life will be a hell of a lot calmer.
Yeah, I can see that. That certainly sounds very attractive. And I guess you're right. If you fall in love with the unknown, yes, you don't know what's going to happen. As you kind of alluded to there, you also don't know what opportunities are going to present themselves as well.
Exactly. There's always opportunities. There's always opportunities. No matter what situation you find yourself in, there's always something. And that opportunity may well be something, I'm not going to do that again. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to actually grow and improve, because you won't make that same mistake.
Yeah, that's true.
So whichever way you go, whichever decision you make, there's always an opportunity to either learn, grow, or move forward. You know, so nothing's bad.
Yeah.
Unless you go up to a drug dealer and start making abuse to him, then that's a bit of a silly thing to do. But hopefully you in a car would be saying, don't go there anyway.
Yeah, no, I like that, that the opportunity might sometimes simply be that that doesn't work. And I guess initial thoughts some people might have is, oh, yeah, but that's a horrible thing. You tried it and it didn't work. You thought it wouldn't work. You found it didn't work. But I guess the opportunity in that there is that you now know for sure, yes, I know that doesn't work. And I know why that doesn't work, which means I know how it could work next time.
Yeah. I'll give you one example. I used to do stand-up comedy in Manchester. And it was quite successful. I was stupid, man, some may say. But I was very, very successful. I was doing really well. I had contracts in various different clubs in Manchester. And one night, I used to script everything. I knew exactly what I was going to be saying on stage, because, you know, I did a lot of observational comedy. So it was all scripted.
Yeah.
Anyway, one night I died. It was the most horrendous experience I've ever gone through in terms of public speaking or anything like that.
Yeah.
And long story short, I ended up getting into a fight with the audience, and I'm cringing now thinking about it. It was horrendous. It was, I can remember saying, you get up here and do it, and it just ended into chaos and farce.
Hmm.
Now, that didn't make sense to me because I didn't go back. I didn't go back and say, you know what, I can't cope with that. You know, this was 20-odd years, nearly 30 years ago. I was speaking to somebody in networking about a year ago now, and I was talking about the fact that I don't script my keynote presentations.
Mm-hmm.
And I just go up on stage. I know what the subject is. I've got all these different stories in the back of my mind, and I just bring relevant ones out and I perform. And it dawned on me. It was because of the experience I had with the comedy that somewhere inside of there, I genuinely did not like the idea of scripting.
Yeah.
Once I'd done some of this meditation and having a word with thoughts and whatever, because it took me a while to get into public speaking because I can't do it. And all I kept on thinking about was the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did this exercise of just being at one with my fears and my thoughts and what have you. And then in the core, and it says, you belong on stage. I could hear this, you belong on stage. And it was only talking through, I thought, you know what, that's what I've learned. Is to be my true self on stage. You know, I've got the flexibility now. If something's going wrong in my presentation, I know I've got the flexibility to bring another story in to make it better.
Yes.
Whereas when it's scripted, I didn't have that flexibility. Yeah. And therefore, that's crumbled.
And that's what you learn from what could
have exactly
seen as a very negative experience, but you allowed yourself to learn even from that.
Exactly. Always look for the learning curve. There's always a learning curve in there.
Yeah.
Always look for it, you know, and it's took me 20 years to work that one out.
Yeah.
20-odd years to work that one out. But it all makes sense in the end.
Certainly.
It all makes sense in the end.
Yeah.
You know, and now when I go up on stage, you know, the testimonials and that I get are just phenomenal because you clearly are speaking from your heart. You know, you clearly speaking from lived and shared experiences, but it's so real and raw.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have had that if it was scripted.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes sense. It just makes sense. People too many times question why or how. Just listen to what's going on inside your body,
yeah,
and you won't go far wrong.
I think that's a beautiful demonstration of or beautiful illustration of everything you said. I think that's a perfect place for us to draw to a conclusion here. Thank you so much for your time, David. I've learned a lot. I know our listeners and viewers will have picked some really juicy tips from all of this. Thank you very much indeed. Really appreciate you taking the time. And thank you, dear viewers and dear listeners, for taking your time to join us here. If you want to find out more about Dave and what he does, best place to go is his website, www.daveheffernan, that's daveheffernan.com, www.daveheffernan.com. If you want to find that website or find out his social media presence and so on, go to the usual place, go to our website, find this episode, and you'll find all the show notes and Dave's contact details there. Again, www.daveheffernan.com. And thank you, Dave, for joining us. Thank you. We'll catch you in the next episode. And as always, I'm going to leave you with my guest's favorite quote, which is, after the darkest hour, glorious sunrise.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.